Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, September 30th, 2016. Rachel and I tonight for you, and we may have our friend Sarah Burse of Raw Story in on the second half of the show if she can pry herself away from writing awesome stories. How dare she?
Yes.
Doesn't she know what her priorities are? But yeah, she's busy doing amazing journalistic stuff. Mm-hmm. So if she has time to chat with us losers, then she will. And if not, that's okay too.
Yeah.
So we had a debate Monday.
Yes.
That was already Monday. It seems like another universe.
Like a lifetime ago. Yeah.
But it was only Monday.
Uh-huh. We had a little watch party over at my house.
We had a nice little watch party.
Yeah.
We had our Green Party Jill Stein voting PhD friend over.
That we were talking about last week. His wife was in attendance at the protest of the debate.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute. Hold on. So the protest was the thing, because I thought mm-hmm. the quote protest was just like she was going to sit and turn her back to the TV.
Oh, no.
Or like go for a jog while the debate was going on.
Oh, no, no. Oh, she went to the protest.
Okay. See, I didn't even know there was thing.
Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure where it was. I haven't talked to her, but there was an actual protest of the debate by both Green Party supporters and also libertarians.
Why didn't Seller go to that?
Oh, he didn't want to do that.
Because, well, he just wanted to like convince me why the third party should have been there.
I don't know. I mean, like, I've known him for a very long time, since I was about 12 or 13 years old.
Right.
And he's still a little bit of a mystery to me.
A bit of an enigma.
Mm-hmm. But no, he's married to his wife, and they are ardent Jill Stein Green Party supporters, much to my disgust. So when we have these conversations, and he is very, like I said before, very intelligent, very educated guy. I don't know how to explain him exactly, but his intellect allows him to sort of debate using a lot of semantic arguments and a lot of things.
Here's what surprised me about the things he was saying during the debate. Like, he was taken off guard and surprised by a lot of the shit Trump was saying.
And Hillary too.
And I was like, well, but this is kind of par for the course. Yeah. Maybe you haven't really been paying attention.
You're just angry because Bernie didn't win.
Right. So you're
protest voting, which he would take great offense to.
And he's a very smart guy, but that just goes to show that even the smart among the protest, angry-ger, Bernie, I hate the DNC establishment now, people haven't really been paying attention.
Right. They just decided they hate Hillary. So at one point, we're sitting on the couch, and Hillary's talking about her plan for debt-free college.
Right.
And he was like, if she could explain that, exactly what she's going to do, that one thing, like, she has no plan. And the rest of us sort of piped up and we're like, look at the website. And he's like, if she could explain that one thing, she's got my vote. And so he pulled it up. And I will admit, there doesn't seem to be much of a outlined idea of how to pay for that. And
right.
he brought that up to me and he said, you know, I think it's great, Rach. Like, I want everybody to have free college too. How do we pay for it? That's really expensive.
Well, Bernie never explained that either.
No. Right. But it's a fair criticism, I would say.
Well, sure.
And so I was like, well, you should email her or ask or something. I don't know. I was like, I don't know. I don't know if it's not on the website. It probably hasn't been fully explained. But I do feel like by the end of the debate, he was like kind of maybe going to vote for Hillary.
Maybe-ish.
You know, like he was like really, really appalled by the things that Trump was saying, which, of course, if you watch the debate, we can get into detail about what those things were.
Yeah, we will.
But and, you know, if you're a Bernie supporter and now a Jill Stein supporter and you haven't really been paying attention because you just decided you hate Hillary and then you watched the debate, I think maybe you realize that her values much more closely align to your values.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Watching his reactions, I think he was expecting the rhetoric that people like him have been saying.
Yeah.
Well, there's no real difference between these two candidates. And then he watched. He's
conservative and hawkish and all the things. And then it was like,
oh, wait a minute. She seems actually like a decent liberal-ish candidate, yeah, and this guy is a maniac.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, dude, we weren't bullshitting you.
No. And if you are appalled by Trump's behavior, which he was, then please don't vote for Jill Stein. No. That's not helping us not have him be the president. That's not helping anything. And his whole argument is like, well, I want there to be a third party next time around. This whole 15% argument, right?
Yeah.
If they get 15%, they get to be on the debate stage. And his argument was sort of And it's like, well, I don't care, because there's really not an electoral way for a third party candidate to be elected anyway. So I, let's change the system like we always talk about. But like, that's not helping me right now. Right. And it's not helping me. Donald Trump cannot be the president. So nothing else sort of matters to me. Not the debates in 2020 or anything else. It matters to me that Donald Trump not be the president.
And then we got this argument about the different political systems in, you know, Canada and the UK. Right. And I'm like, well, they're parliamentary. Yes. It's very, very different. They form coalition governments.
They do, yes.
I mean, it's a whole different ball of wax. It's a
completely different ballgame. Yeah.
Plus, he also doesn't want to accept that the two third-party choices are just, they're maniacs. Not good choices.
No. Tell me how Jill Stein's better than Hillary fucking Clinton.
Or how Gary Johnson wouldn't just humiliate himself on a debate stage.
Exactly.
Even with Trump up there,
let's just talk about the thing that happened this week with Gary Johnson real quick. Because this is the man that everyone's shouting and screaming and yelling, and he should be on the debate stage because then you'd really get to see who he is and how amazing he is, and he'd win. He was asked by
Chris Matthews
at a town hall style thing that they had with him shortly, I think, after the debate, right? Sort of their consolation prize for him.
Was it after the debate? Yeah, I guess it must have been Tuesday.
Chris Matthews asked him, who is your favorite current world leader? And he said basically, what? And Chris Matthews like just starts naming countries and areas of the world. He's like, Mexico, Canada, Germany, anywhere in South America,
and then Bill Weld tried to pipe in.
Gary Johnson was like, I just don't know. I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment, he says. Because he literally cannot name.
He's thinking of trying to think of the former Mexican president, Vicente Fox.
Exactly. But he's like, no, I'm talking about people. And so then he brings up the Israeli guy who died.
Shimon Peres.
That was in the media this week. And he's like, no. A current leader, a live leader. And he's just like, yeah, I don't. I'm having an Aleppo moment. I can't think of any. And then his running mate, Bill Weld, said his name. Was like Angela Merkel, and Chris Matthews just is sort of exasperated at this point. It's just like, yeah, I guess you can't argue with
that. That's the way he said it, like just throwing it out. Like, here's a name.
Here's a name of, I think she does a thing, right?
This will get you off the hook, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And then Johnson likes to say, no, I don't really like Merkel. So.
Right. Like, you know, she is.
Whatever.
It's like, it doesn't affect current, like we said last week about Aleppo, like, since it's not about the United States and capitalism, then he doesn't know anything about it.
No.
That's it. So it's this whole ball game is just deregulation, taxes, and he's got like a pot angle. That's all he's got. Doesn't know shit about the world.
Can you imagine
Hillary Clinton would rip him apart on this stuff?
Oh yeah, it would be like, humiliating.
Yeah.
Well, this is what makes me laugh about the debate, because for months and months, all we heard from these right wing trolls is that Trump is just going to crush Hillary on the debate stage, and he's going to rip into her and she's going to just shrink. And
there's all these expectation games that are going on. And basically all he has to do is not like throw up on the stage or burn the building down. And she has to perform the greatest debate in history or she's going to lose. And then that's what happened. She performed.
She was fine.
She was tremendous.
Yeah. I don't think she necessarily was amazing. She was just good.
She was good under extraordinary circumstances, though. You know, the expectations that have been set for her.
Sure. But she was also going against a chump.
Standing next to her was, I mean.
And every trap she laid for him, he walked right into.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And
keeps walking into them.
Yeah, all week, which we'll get into. But the first like 20 minutes or so.
He was on script.
He did okay. He was talking about TPP and trade and the economy, and he did all right.
Yeah.
And then
The questions came up about race, mm-hmm. and about the comments about women and
yep.
all the things.
He completely melted down. Yeah, he completely fell apart. He just started rambling completely incoherently.
Yes.
We were trying to even piece together pieces of his sentence that meant things, and we couldn't seem to do that.
No, it was just word salad.
He interrupted her, I think someone counted 56 times. Mm-hmm. He spoke for, it was an hour and a half long debate, and he spoke for like 67% of that debate. Right.
Which was not good for him.
No. It would have been much better for him if he had talked less.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time he opened his mouth after about the 20-minute mark, he just couldn't.
No,
make
she was glad
sentences.
To just let him just ramble like a madman.
Oh yeah, she was so poised and zen, and just it was beautiful to watch her just watch him melt down, and she just sort of look over at him with this smile. And I've seen a lot of people on social media talk about that smile, and mostly in regard to male journalists talking about her smile, and a lot of people saying. That's the smile every woman has learned when men are saying things. That's the I'm pretending to listen to you smile.
Well, it was like the Red Letter Media Attack of the Clones review.
Yeah.
Where Mike Stiklaw says, like, a woman's smile can be one of 87 things, condescension, incredulity.
Yes.
It was like all those things
yes.
wrapped into one.
Exactly, exactly. And she just stood there and let him
and had
just
that smile,
unravel like, and melt down. She did a little shoulder shimmy at one point, which was my favorite thing. It's been, like, memed a million times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kate McKinnon will
she'll knock eat the park it up. I can't wait till tomorrow night. Yeah, so... Anyway, Hillary completely owned everything. I mean, she just completely owned face. At the end, the big surprise that has taken up the rest of the week's news, as far as Trump is concerned, is she started talking about his women problem and his previous comments that he's made about women. And then she brings this bombshell in and she's like, there's a woman. Her name is Alicia
Machado.
She was former Miss Universe from Venezuela. And... She reports that you called her Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeper because she's Latina. Mm-hmm. And that was the end for him.
He just
could not. No, I didn't say that. Where'd you find her? Where'd you find her? You're like, dude, like it's all. So anyway, that happened. He melted down completely at that point. He was done. And then he can't let it go.
No, of course not.
He can't let it go this entire week. He just, like, there's so many more pressing issues for him to be talking about. And he refuses to do any of that because he just wants to talk about this former Miss Universe winner.
She really did get fat.
She got fat. He, like, didn't even say, I'm really sorry I said that and I apologize to her. He came out on the morning shows the next day and said, yeah, she got fat.
She
gained, like, 60 pounds. She was fat. What was I supposed to do? Like, yeah, I called her Miss Piggy. And then we found out. He was like sending cameras, video cameras and news crews to watch her work out so that he could hold her accountable, quote, for losing the weight. There are multiple aired interviews with him and her where he's talking about her weight and she sort of jabs back at him a few times about it. It's crazy.
And back when Donald Trump was just the playboy.
Right. This is the late 90s, like 97.
Mogul, Howard Stern guest, reality show guy. Nobody really cared. I mean,
He was a sleazeball and everyone knew it. No, and it was like, that's just that sleazy
guy. But now
guy.
He's running for president.
Right.
And this stuff matters.
Yeah.
You can't just do that. I mean, I guess you can and still keep things relatively close in a presidential race, which is insane to me.
It's insane. I mean, she even brought up Rosie O'Donnell and then he started firing about that again.
She's like, well, Rosie O'Donnell really is a horrible fat pig that everybody hates.
And nobody feels sorry for her. And also it was funny. And you're like, wow, you just said that at a debate.
He said so many things in that debate that were just jaw-dropping.
Oh my God.
The Machado thing is getting the most play. But remember... There were bigger ones where she basically said, you don't pay any taxes. And he's like, well, that makes me smart.
Yes. She referred to his, because he won't release his tax returns, right? So we can't see any of them. But there was some public filing and he had to produce a couple of tax returns from like 10, 12 years ago for some lawsuit or something. He had to make
one of the
public
record. Many lawsuits that he faces.
And she said, the only thing that we know is, that from that he paid $0 in federal income tax. And he literally leaned on the mic and went, yeah, that makes me smart. And like everybody in the room we were in, like the air left the room. We were like, holy fucking shit. Yeah, did he just admit that?
And we weren't the only ones that felt that way.
No.
Like there were focus groups in Ohio and yeah. everybody was just like, oh no, he didn't just say that.
Yeah.
But he did.
He did.
He did. And then another moment was when he was talking about the contractors and people that
yes.
he stiffed.
Yes.
And he said, well, maybe they didn't do a good job and maybe right. they didn't deserve to get paid.
Right. And they got paid, like not what we agreed to, but like they didn't do a good enough job to get paid that. And you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that he gets away with any level of that, and it's not just completely...
It's like...
That to me the most, and I keep going back to this, the stiffing the contractors thing, because you yeah. remember how crazy everybody went over Joe the plumber, which was a completely fake thing.
Yes.
It was this guy who hypothetically wanted to start his own business, and then he was worried that Obama's tax plans were going to tax him too much, and the media got really excited that this means Obama is not connecting with small business
old
owners,
white dudes right? in the Midwest, right?
But here you have an actual candidate who actually stiffed shitloads of actual small business owners
right.
all around the country, and it's kind of like, eh.
And he's like, yeah, I'm a businessman. Eh. That's how it works.
Well, that's, but
and you're like, what? The what? No. But they are business people.
But the media has the same shrug, and that's what I don't understand.
I don't either. I don't know.
And the Clinton campaign is running a bunch of ads, or maybe it's a super PAC for Clinton, is running a bunch of ads in places like Ohio and
Pennsylvania
yep. with those contractors who got stiffed, which I think is great. I yep. just don't understand why it's not just such a monstrously huge story.
Yeah.
But again, it probably goes back to that thing where there's so much crap
yeah.
in the avalanche of Trump shit.
Right.
Like you can't focus on one thing.
Right. Right.
And I know Oberman says, no, we need to focus on it all, but that sort of it becomes a problem for the media to focus on any one thing.
Well, and they want to always get the scoop on the next big thing,
right.
the next scandal. So, like, right. let's not investigatively, you know, sort of investigate
well,
and do
well,
journalism.
David Farenthold is, and we'll get to that.
Yes. But so at least the sort of media that the 24-hour
right.
News cycle, they just want to see the next thing he's going to do. So what the next thing he's been doing is every day he brings up this Miss Universe woman. Every day
including just this morning, 3 a.m.
Yes.
He must have jumped up in a cold sweat and said, God, this Bridgetto thing's really irking me. I got to
really
jump on Twitter.
Can't take it anymore.
And just
melt it down.
Just melt down and accuse Hillary of making her a U.S. citizen
yes.
or something.
Yes, that say, did crooked Hillary help Ashley M. get her citizenship just so that she could bring her up in the debate. Like he's not, this is the brilliance of Donald Trump. He's not saying that happened.
Right.
He's saying, did it?
Yeah.
You tell me. I don't know. I just made it up at 3 a.m, but you tell me if it happened. Maybe it did.
Right.
Probably not. There's no evidence. I'm just saying maybe. Also, there's this really disgusting thing that's happening with this story that I want to get into a little bit because he tweeted from between about 3 a.m. to about 5:30 a.m.,
uh-huh.
somewhere in there, about five different tweets. And they were about, like, don't believe fake sources, which was incoherent. And then one about stupid Hillary not vetting this
lady
Miss
because
Universe
she's
person
horrible and
because
she made a
sex has,
tape.
Like, no morals or virtue. She's not an... So this is the thing. He frames it this way. She's not an angel. She's disgusting. You can be one of two things, right, for Trump. You can either be an angel or you can be disgusting.
Yeah.
You can either be, it's the Madonna whore.
Right.
Right? He has no way of looking at women in any fashion, including his own fucking daughter, that is not either you are an angel or you are a disgusting pig. You're either moral and virtuous and beautiful.
And sexy, though.
Sexy, but not a slut. Or... you didn't fuck me or you did something sexual that like I find offensive. So you're disgusting
or that he can use against you
or you're Rosie O'Donnell or you're not hot enough or whatever it is. Right. Like there's yeah. really two women in the world for Donald Trump. It's
right.
Angel and it's disgusting. That's
right.
it. Very men's rights activist. Very like women are here. It offends him deeply that these two women are not in their place.
Mm-hmm.
That this woman is beating him, first of all, Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And this other woman who he literally used to own and control.
Yes.
Is now humiliating him.
Yes.
By saying things that he said.
Right.
and it's working, and he's losing his mind because yeah. it's like, you can't say that, lady person.
Yeah.
You're just a woman that I used to control, and now you're saying things,
I
and you're
made
not allowed
you.
To... Yeah.
I made you.
You don't get to say... Nobody cares what you say. You're disgusting, and then he made up some sex tape that doesn't exist, apparently.
Right.
And...
So what if it did, though?
That's exactly.
That's nobody saying, like... Okay, she made a sex tape, so that makes it okay for him to fat shame her?
Or call her disgusting and amoral. And his entire campaign and all of his surrogates are on this board now. They're like, well, I think you should look into her past and see that she's not
the old boys club
moral,
of,
virtuous person that Hillary
Newt
Clinton
Gingrich
thinks.
And Rudy Giuliani. Yeah. All the,
it's like Clinton doesn't...
The womanizing nine wives club.
Exactly. But it's fine because they're men and that's what men do.
They're conservative men.
Conservative men.
Republican
that's
men.
That's right. And they can have all the wives and all the mistresses and all the everythings because they're men.
It's so old school. It's so like beyond Don Draper, Mad Men. It's like a parody of itself.
You're like, literally Newt Gingrich is like, well, she's not a very moral or virtuous person if you look at her history. And like, cool, Newt, let's talk about your history, you moral, virtuous. No, like, I don't want to slut shame anybody. Right. But I also feel like. It's the same way I feel about outing people. I don't think you should ever out anybody, right? People have a right to come out on their own. The exception to that is public figures who are anti-gay bigots, right? I think you should out public figures who are anti-gay bigots.
Yeah, of course.
Senators, congresspeople. I don't think you should out anybody else.
Right.
The same way about slut shaming. If you're going to be a public figure and you're going to slut shame women and talk about how they're not moral enough for you or virtuous enough for you or
prude enough for you, politically convenient.
And then you are this philandering mistress having seven wives having person, then yeah, I get to talk about that.
Of course.
I don't talk about that with... you know, Anthony Weiner, because he never proposed legislation to like make it illegal to be slutty. You know what I mean? But these men are hypocrites, and the hypocrisy is what makes me crazy. And also the slut shaming.
Right. And of course, Hillary can't do that.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
Well, that's the latest thing now. It's becoming so desperate that they're going to re-litigate Monica Lewinsky now.
Right.
Like, that's a thing that they think is going to...
What? Everybody's over it, A.
Well, Roger Stone wrote a book that claims that Hillary really went after the women that Bill fooled around with, which...
I've heard that, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, so she's no feminist, and this should turn a bunch of women voters somehow.
And yet, we all love Claire Underwood, so good luck with that.
Well, right, but the women who are already believe that and are 100% for Trump, you know, that'll egg them on some,
right.
Maybe.
Here's my feeling about this, and this may be unpopular, but it's true. I kind of don't doubt that that's true. I feel like Bill is a little bit of a philanderer.
Of course.
I think that they likely have an open marriage.
Yes.
That she was aware and that her greatest frustration was that he was so
careless
and not cautious, and that stuff was starting to come out. And so I think it's probably likely that she did a little bit of intimidation or a little bit of backroom sort of, let's find out what you are going to say or not going to say. And maybe I can offer you things, because they're a political animal. That marriage is political. It has been forever. I don't mean that they don't love each other, but I mean that they had ambition and they had a track.
They're a toned down version of the Underwoods.
They are.
Minus the murder and mayhem.
Exactly. Like, I don't think that makes them bad either. I think they had ambition. I think they had goals. I think it's largely not really like a power thing as much as it is like Hillary Clinton is a person of service. Like, she wanted this. She's wanted this her whole life. And so did he. And so she understands the way that the political world works, and that maybe she had to say or do a few things when stuff started to get sticky that like doesn't make her the warm, fuzzy grandmother, but like, well, okay, so whatever. Yeah. If a man did it, it would be like, what a shrewd guy, right?
Well, here's the thing, right? But when she's been her most popular several times, when she was Secretary of State and
Senator,
mm-hmm. and also when all the Lewinsky stuff hit the fan and she just kind of stood as tall as she could.
Yeah.
and he obviously appeared very hurt and frustrated, but didn't run away or hide from the cameras. She kind of stood there and said, yeah, this sucks. I'm really pissed, but I'm going to stick by my husband and his presidency, and we have a lot of work to do, but
I love him fundamentally.
Yeah.
You know?
And she actually became really, really popular. A lot of women could relate to that, actually. And, yeah. And I think that the smoky cigar room with the Gingriches and the Giulianis probably don't grasp that.
Right.
I mean, this line of attack is all being written by men, I guarantee you. I Kellyanne Conway, if she's sitting there begrudgingly saying, okay, I guess we'll do this, is not like, yeah, this is a good idea. I guarantee that.
Agreed. Now, there are other women, my mom being among them, who really liked Hillary because of the work she was doing with children and that kind of stuff, and then really turned against her when the affair happened because she didn't leave him. And my mom took that as a sign of weakness and that it was a sham marriage. And my mom has some very interesting ideas about monogamy that we won't get into at the moment, but she's a big fan. And it's a very like black and white issue for her.
Yeah,
it's very,
for a lot
like,
of people it is.
If someone cheats on you, that's the end, period. There's no... Yeah. There's no gray area. There's no room for anything else. And that marriage is built on monogamy.
Right.
That's her belief. And so there's other women
and
that...
she's entitled to that.
She is. She is. She and I disagree on that point. But I think there were some women that felt that way. That were like, if my husband ever cheated on me,
I
would
leave.
Yeah,
but those people are already in the Trump camp, I guarantee you.
I don't know. What about Marge from Davenport? Who's like... I mean, her husband publicly cheated on her and
you know
she
what?
Stayed.
Marge's third sister, her husband cheated on her.
And they stayed
they have
for
four
the kids.
And they stayed for the kids and they worked it out.
Yeah.
And,
that's true. But is she disappointed in third sister or does she get it?
She maybe was at first, but then she realized the courage and the strength it took and she admires her. And
that's true.
We're talking real life here.
Right.
Not sort of pretend.
Right.
And I think more women will empathize with Hillary Clinton sticking through it the way she did through those years and be less apt to say, well, she went after the home wreckers. Because you think Aunt Marge has a lot of sympathy for Jennifer Flowers?
No.
Or Monica Lewinsky?
No.
And a lot of the shit they
and
took
I think
is not fair.
Granted, have massive sympathy for those women.
Yes.
Like an overwhelming
But we're talking
amount.
About what Aunt Marge thinks.
Right. Marge, not so much. Marge is
She's got way
the
more sympathy for Hillary Clinton than the home wreckers.
Yes, definitely.
And
definitely.
Roger Stone and Donald Trump want to say these poor home wreckers. Look at how mean Hillary Clinton was to them. I don't see that. I'm partisan, but is that really going to play with a lot of women voters?
And I don't think she was mean to them. The stories that I've heard that I find the most credible are like having a conversation with one of them after something happened and saying, you know, basically we really value discretion and just using kind of coded language that says,
fine.
I know what happened, but like
whatever,
all I'm asking
whatever
you to
you
do,
want to call it.
But I don't think she was mean or threatening. I think she was, look, I'm in a position of power and I understand that something's going on and I don't care, but I need you to understand that we value discretion above everything else.
Yeah, but see, these conversations have already been had. These books have already been written.
Yes.
These 60-minute interviews have already been done. I mean,
yeah, this whole thing has been litigated in the press and literally.
But we could try to relitigate it, I suppose. I just don't see that much currency for it, but maybe. I don't know.
I don't either. And the thing is, like, this is not new. Nothing he's saying about her is new. We all know.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that is coming out about him since he hasn't been vetted for the last 30 years and
not as a politician.
Nook and cranny of his life uncovered.
Right.
So the stuff we're finding out about him is going to be revelatory because we don't know yet.
Well,
the stuff about her, I don't think you can make the... I think people don't give a shit about Monica Lewinsky. Nobody cares about the blowjob. Nobody... It's like, oh my God, are we talking about that again?
Well,
like, it's
done. If they still do, they were never, ever, ever going to vote for the Clintons.
Right. They hate the Clintons, so it's over. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So, but let's talk about more of the revelations about Trump this week. David Fahrenthold from the Washington Post, who's been dogged in pursuing... What's this Trump charity thing all about?
Yes.
Has uncovered all kinds of interesting shit. Not only last week did he discover that the Trump Foundation was paying off lawsuits or settlements yes. with foundation money?
Correct.
Now they're saying, now he found out, I think just this week, that they're not licensed to be a foundation.
Right.
So they might have been operating illegally this whole time.
Right. So I can tell you from experience that in order to be a tax-exempt charitable organization, you have to apply for this tax-exempt status from the IRS.
Yes.
And it's called a 501c3. And it is long and arduous and a pain in the ass, and it costs money, and it is it's really like a bureaucratic nightmare to get done. Yeah. But that makes sense, because otherwise, if it was a super easy process, everybody would just open a charity and not pay taxes, right?
Right, yeah,
so it has to be like very legitimate, and you have to provide a lot of documentation about what your goals are and what all these things. So it doesn't surprise me that much if Donald Trump was just like, fuck it, let's not worry about it.
Well, this is mostly a New York law issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I see.
And the AG in New York is now looking into it among
a bunch of other so it's not his federal status. It's a New York thing.
I don't know, but I hadn't heard about the federal status. If you didn't properly do 501c3 documentation, it's a state thing to be licensed because it's based out of the state of New York.
Right.
Of course. And since it's based out of the state of New York, it has to follow New York state guidelines for being a charitable organization. And apparently it never legally was.
Wow.
According to Fahrenthold.
Wow.
So there's that. Now there's also the revelations, which have, I would think, very important ramifications, maybe for South Florida, is that Trump was violating the Cuba embargo in the 90s.
Right.
By laying the groundwork to build a casino or something.
What happened? I heard something about that late this afternoon.
Well, he spent money down there.
Okay.
Which you weren't supposed to do.
Right.
In a business interest in looking to possibly build a casino, waiting for Castro to die, apparently.
Oh, he was going to build a casino in Cuba.
I think that was the plan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So some of those more conservative Cuban residents of Florida who tend to vote Republican might be very angry about that.
Well, I think most of them have been Republican for so long and just hate Hillary Clinton and everything Democrat is communist that they will overlook it or not care. And a lot of people don't care about the embargo anymore. But, you know, these are the same people that were up in arms that Obama wanted to end the embargo and normalize relations. So you can't have it really both ways. And Marco Rubio, who's been against any sort of normalization.
Yes.
And I think actually probably passionately does have mistrusts and resentment towards the Castro regime.
Right.
And he has publicly said he's troubled by this, but I don't know if anything else is going to come of it, because he's got his own race that he's trying to win against Patrick Murphy, and he needs Trump voters to come out and vote for him.
Right.
So it is a very, very tricky situation, and Florida's very close. And the last few polls,
which is a crazy thing.
The last few polls have showed Hillary up it's close though.
Yeah.
A couple points. Yeah. One came out that showed her +4, another one today +1. The average is about +2-ish.
Which is within the margin of error.
Which is within the margin. Well, it's, and when you're averaging a bunch of different polls, margin of error, I don't take into account so much. She's probably leading by a point or two, plus probably has a better ground game. So
she definitely does that. Yeah.
He can't afford this kind of issue just hanging up around, even if it puts some doubt in a few of the most ardent Republican, diehard, older Cuban American voters.
Right, who actually like fled Cuba and the regime and they're pretty hardline, a lot of them, about
you get a few thousand of them to stay home and vote Johnson. That's potentially a big deal.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it'll amount to nothing. Armando is not convinced it's going to amount to much, that it'll be more of a headache for Rubio, if anything.
Hmm.
I don't know, because I know a lot has changed just in the past 8 years. I left in 2008, and Fidel and the embargo were still sort of hot topic things. And if you had a presidential candidate who was down there spending money in violation of the embargo, as of late of 2008, that would have been a very, very big deal. Now, in 8 years, a lot can change. Can it completely change to where it doesn't even matter?
You know,
that's hard for me to.
My white Midwestern parents are pretty fervent about the Cuba situation. They were you know, sort of in their young adult lives when the whole thing went down.
Cuban Missile Crisis.
My aunt was actually in Cuba and almost got stuck there.
In 1959?
During, yeah. Exactly right. And they are not from Cuba or anything, but they, it was just, I think, such a like a...
Yeah. I bet they would just make some excuse, though, and not...
Monumental point.
Not to care.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked to them about it, actually, this week at all.
And I haven't talked to Raul about it. I sent him an email. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah. So I don't know. But even they are like, that would piss them off.
You
like,
think?
They hate this idea of the embargo being lifted. They are vehemently against Castro and communism and all the things. So I don't know. But I imagine if they were pissed about it, then for sure...
the older Cuban Americans.
Yeah, I think that
still,
it might matter. But again, I don't know if...
Yeah, party just is so become so tribal that I don't know.
And it's Clinton, so like...
And it's Clinton, and they hate Clinton, and they hate Janet Reno, and they associate the Clintons with Janet Reno and Elian Gonzalez.
Right,
and
right,
there's
right.
a lot of shit
that's
that,
true.
That runs very deep in that community.
Yeah.
I lived there for
most of your life.
So
I know.
And I can tell you, again, if this was 2008, this would still definitely be a big, big deal.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see when we find out. We'll look at all the exits, and I think it'll be so... I can't wait for November 9th. I just want to know all the speculating and all of the, you know, guessing and all of it. I still don't think we have any... goddamn clue what's going to happen on November 8th. Sometimes I just feel like I have no idea.
I have a vaguely decent idea. What I really don't know is what's going to happen with the Senate.
Yes.
That I'm still fairly puzzled over. And there's...
That's what I mean. Will he have a huge impact on the down ballot, or will he have none? Will he have a moderate amount of impact?
You know, in a lot of places, he doesn't seem to be having much impact. Like Nevada, the polling still looks good for the Republican, for Heck, and Trump is not doing as well. And
I can tell you in Colorado,
in New Hampshire,
there's definitely a down ballot effect.
Well, I wanted to talk about that too, because I hear our friends Greg and Kager talking about Colorado still a lot, and a lot of times they're getting stuff wrong.
Okay.
And I try to correct them on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like they said, Clinton stopped advertising in Colorado. That's not true. She's still advertising here. I'm seeing lots of Clinton
ads. They pulled a bunch of money from Colorado because she had such a high lead.
But not all of it.
And I've seen multiple ads. I think they're pouring money back in, but even there never weren't ads.
Yeah. They never completely stopped.
No.
And there's been a decent amount the whole time for the past couple months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I haven't seen as many Trump campaign ads, but I've seen lots of super PAC NRA ads. And,
yep, me too. No ads from his campaign directly. I have not seen a single one. That doesn't say much because I don't watch a lot of local television.
Right.
But I do watch some, and I've seen lots of Hillary, and then
some
super PAC
ads. I watch all the
ads.
Football games and stuff, and that's where they air.
Right.
So that gives me a good idea. Of what kind of stuff they're airing. And yeah, Hillary had never stopped advertising. She's still advertising quite a bit here, and she's got the money to do it. So why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I think
it's a firewall state.
She can
hold those 9 electoral votes. That's a pretty big deal.
It is. And we are so 30-30-30.
Yeah. And this is what I wanted to talk about. I was going to bring it up to Greg. I did a little bit of canvassing. You obviously did a lot more.
Yes.
But this was the... And this will be kind of the last thought before we go to the break, but this is sort of the sense I got in my brief canvassing was, and I should point out, we canvassed mostly unaffiliated or independent.
Correct.
Doors.
Right. So we did unaffiliated, which is what we call independent voters in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Although you can register as independent, but that's not a thing. It's unaffiliated. We did those. We did... not strong Dems, so Dems who don't vote that often or who we don't really know that much about. And then we did Libertarians.
Yes.
And then soft Republicans.
Yeah.
And especially Republican women, they were educated.
So you're talking about the real middle
of
the state.
Yes.
In the largest population area.
That 30%.
That 30%. So this is what the sense I got. And you tell me if you feel a little differently. I sense that they don't really like Hillary Clinton.
Right.
But they despise Trump.
Correct. They really can't vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I didn't talk to any person who was excited to vote for Donald Trump. Not one. And we didn't knock on Republican, like hard Republican, I'm always going to vote Republican and I vote every year right. doors because there's no point. We're right. not switching
now, their minds. The only people I know from that group are definitely not going to vote Dem or the gun people.
Yes.
Even though they were, unlike Florida, they were willing to at least listen to what we had to say.
They were, very much so. And I was actually happy to sort of find out that most of them didn't have this idea that Hillary wanted to take their guns nearly as much as they thought Obama wanted to. Oh, so it was like they see her as kind of hawkish
yeah.
and pragmatic.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of them that I talked to, when we talked about gun stuff, they talked about the Democrats. Mm-hmm. But when it came to Hillary and guns, it was like, yeah, she yeah. probably knows that's not a good idea. Like they just had this sense that like she's too pragmatic and hawkish to think that like.
Yeah, but it still drives me crazy. They still say that about Obama. It's like, okay, well, yeah. in 8 years, has he done that?
A single thing. Right. No. I mean,
he's talked about reducing gun violence. Has he introduced any legislation to take any guns away?
Nope. Not a single thing, and really, unfortunately. But so anyway, the other thing is definitely that's bad on her side is there's definitely this idea that she's dishonest, mm-hmm. that she's lying, that she's sort of just not above board.
Right.
Don't know if I can trust her. I'm not sure. You know.
Yeah.
But not a single person did I talk to that was like Trump. Like not a single.
Well, this is why Gary Johnson polls between 8 to 12% or better here
yep.
often.
Yep.
So I think this is, again, one of these states where the Johnson vote will hurt Trump more than Clinton.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
Not maybe by a ton. And you would think Stein would be doing really well here. Not really.
No, nobody cares.
To like 1-2%.
And
she's running ads here, and she's got yeah. a group of people here that we know personally mm-hmm. that are all about her. But mm-hmm. Pueblo, nobody gives a fuck about
no,
her. Colorado Springs,
no,
nobody gives no. a fuck about her. Nowhere outside of Boulder and parts of Denver
right.
to a few right. people. Care about
maybe there's a tiny group in Fort Collins just because it's a college town.
There's probably a stinky guy in Vail
for sure
who plays Jimmy
maybe
Buffett
Breckenridge
songs at the,
but like realistically Jill bar. Stein isn't gonna do shit in Colorado. It's gonna be Hillary, Trump, and Johnson, and some of these Johnson people it's gonna hurt both. I mean, I think it's gonna take some Hillary votes away. But I do
think
it's going to hurt
Trump.
Because
there's more people who attend and never vote for a Democrat who just can't stand Trump.
Can't stand him. Yep.
I mean, I had people that, you know, would just go on a 10-minute tirade about how much they hated Donald Trump.
Me too.
And they were unaffiliated yeah. or independent.
Yeah,
they
me too.
They weren't even registered Dem.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Particularly when I went to homes of Latino or Latina people.
For me, it was
I had a... there was a woman that we talked to, and she was like loading her car, and her mom was standing there and her sister was standing there, and her mom started speaking in Spanish to her, and she was translating for us and basically said like, I want you to tell them right now that if they're with Trump, but we're not voting Trump and we hate Trump and blah, blah, blah. And we were like, no, we hate Trump. We hate Trump. We hate him. Like yeah. we love Hillary. Here is our literature for this other candidate. So it is definitely, and in that district, there's a large, it's one of the most diverse districts in the state of Colorado.
Yeah,
so there's a huge yeah. Latino population, and there's a large African-American population. Well, I say large, it's like 9%, which is large for Colorado.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to add that, polling firms don't do well with Spanish speaking only here. And we have a yeah. lot of that.
Yes.
And in Nevada.
Yes.
And I think that's part
Arizona.
Of, yeah. Yep. And I think that's part of the issue with some of the polling that you may have seen that maybe shows Trump in a stronger position than he actually is. And it was the same with Romney. Mm-hmm. I remember a lot of Nevada polls showed it really close to Romney leading, and Obama ended up winning Nevada by 7.
Right.
And same with Colorado. There were right. a lot of Colorado polls that showed Romney either challenging or ahead, and he didn't Obama win by like 9?
He won by a lot in Colorado.
Well, in 2012, it was less. It was more like 6 or 7.
That's
2008,
still
it was a lot.
Like it was significant.
Right. And I think part of that is they're just not reaching enough Hispanic voters.
Absolutely. Particularly Spanish speaking.
I saw a poll the other day that showed Hillary plus 2 Colorado. And they showed only 9% of the voting population as being Hispanic. Well, it was 14% in 2012.
Yeah.
And it could be as high as 18 or 19%
yes.
this
absolutely
year. So
particularly given the things Trump has said about the Mexican American community, yeah. Mexican immigrants, illegal immigrants, like his
and
platform about immigrants,
there's been a huge
pisses
voting drive
people
here.
Off here. Yeah, there
so,
has.
So I don't know if we're going to flip Arizona, but I honestly think that Colorado and Nevada are fool's gold for Republicans.
I do.
I just
yeah.
think that
yes.
the demographics suck.
Yep.
Here and absolutely. even. The middle of the road people here, Trump is not winning them over.
He's not. And the middle of the road people in Colorado, Coloradans are, there's a stereotype about us, sort of like Canada. We're very nice people. We're
some
nice and we're, we tend to get along with our neighbors. We tend yeah. to, like NPR has done stories just about the weirdness of Colorado and how you can have people that vehemently disagree, but we sort of feel like a community.
Yeah,
it's not everywhere, but right. certainly in Fort Collins where I grew up, you're nice to people. And yeah. Trump is not nice. Trump no. is a bully and he's a bigot and we are a pretty diverse state. And so
look, I'm not saying there's plenty of right wingers here are going to vote for Trump.
Oh, Colorado Springs is garbage and it's going to yeah. go all the way Trump and that's fine. This just,
yeah. And there's right wingers here in Denver that are going to be all for Trump all day, but there's
yes.
not enough in the middle and there's too many Hispanic voters who are, he's going to get slaughtered with them here. So I think
yep.
Hillary's going to win Colorado comfortably. I think she's
yes.
going to win Nevada fairly comfortably. Arizona, mm-hmm. I think she's going to make it really, really close.
Which is amazing.
Which is amazing.
Because it's Arizona.
Yeah, it's Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think still think she'll win there, but she's got a little better chance. Georgia, I think, is kind of fool's gold for Democrats.
I
don't think we're quite ready to flip that yet, but... Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Hopefully, Sarah Burris will be joining us in the second half. We're going to talk about more stuff coming up. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony, and we're very delighted to have our good friend Sarah Burris of RawStory.com on with us yet again. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
We're so happy to have you on, and it's been what you thought was going to be an easy night turned into a crazy busy night, which is why you're joining us here for the second segment. And you want to talk about that, or you want to talk about your visit to the Hill, or... What would you like
I can
to talk
about everything. I mean, I just to sort of sum up the night. I mean, so until the election, my schedule got switched. So I'm doing nights on Thursday and Friday night because there's a lot of stuff that just sort of happens toward the end of the election.
Right.
And
so, noticed.
Having like another staffer on would be really helpful. So, so we also have another staffer who's starting, who's new next week, who's going to be like my partner in crime on nights. But for right now, because there are folks out of town and stuff, I'm like shouldering the website by myself tonight.
Wow.
And,
wow.
And there was like no news for a couple of hours. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. This is terrible. This is terrible. And all of a sudden, God bless her, Anna Navarro just goes nuclear on Jeffrey Lord. In like, and even Anderson Cooper's kind of looking at them like, this is happening. And Jeffrey Lord was kind of being a little bit condescending and flip and just sort of laughing off Trump's 3 a.m. tweets and Cooper and Anna Navarro kept asking him, you know, do you think that this is presidential? And he was like, oh, come on, it's not a big deal. And she, and Anna Navarro was just like, look, we are talking about one of the highest offices in the world. This is, you know, the leader, we call it the leader of the free world. This is somebody who I think we should take really seriously. This is somebody who's going to sit behind that desk in the Oval Office. And we need somebody who is at least respectful enough of the office to be, I guess, irreverent in a way. She was way more eloquent and like incredibly patriotic about it, the way that she was describing it. And I was just like, damn, girl.
That's amazing. What was this on?
So this was on AC360 this evening.
Okay.
And I posted about it. It's on rawstory.com right now. And the post went crazy. And even Anna Navarro was, like liking a bunch of my tweets. Nice. Because I was quoting her as she was talking. And so she gets off of TV and starts liking a bunch of my tweets. And at one point I just like tweeted her and I said, something about how she needs her own show. And they're like, I gotta say, like, she's a Republican. I don't believe in most of the things that she believes in. But at least whenever it comes to picking candidates that are not completely fucking crazy, I mean, she seems to have a pretty good track record. And the way that she can articulate Trump's insanity from the Republican perspective has been so refreshing.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Just, you know, she's been the voice of reason.
Right.
I try not to watch CNN at all. I'm just so disgusted that they keep Lewandowski on the payroll, that they have Ford on the payroll, Alex Castellanos on the payroll. It's really gross.
Yeah. I agree. And it's, the sad thing is, honestly, the only reason I have to watch it, other than the fact that I totally have a crush on Angela Rye, but, right? Yes. Oh my God. So smart. So
yep.
smart.
Yep.
And I have an Angela Rye story for you too after this, but the only reason I end up having to watch it is because shit goes down on CNN. You don't have the kind of absurd conflict that you see on CNN. You don't have it on MSNBC. And I think that is the reason that CNN pays people like, Castellanos and Lewandowski and Jeffrey Lord and all of these crazy, insane people, because they create so much conflict that it then makes news that then gets them traction.
Yeah.
It
gets some ratings.
And it gets clicks
no
to the website.
There's no other reason to watch CNN.
I mean, really, there's no, I think during the daytime, John Berman's puns just make my day. I mean,
I don't think I watch CNN during the day.
Because I have to do it all damn day.
Right.
and once you get to like that late morning hour, and I've been up at that point since like 5 a.m. and John Berman making puns, I'm just so grateful. I mean, it's the little things in life at that point. I think Kate Baldwin's pretty great too. She was the one who tried to, talk about the little boy in Syria and just started sobbing on the air.
Oh yeah. I heard about that.
And so it's like, anytime you have a journalist who has a soul, you know, that always makes me feel a little bit better about the world.
Well, that's amazing. So, what was the other story?
Oh, and then Angela Rye. Mm-hmm. Bill Maher tonight completely went off the rails. And so I had to push a story out about that. The guy who is Trump's economic advisor, Stephen Moore, just wouldn't stop talking over people. And, you know, sometimes a lot of Trump advisors and Trump surrogates will do that. Well, they'll just keep talking and keep talking. And you see that a lot. This just became a level of absurdity that, I mean, you should go look at the video.
This on Bill Maher's show?
Yeah, this was just on like literally 30 minutes ago.
Okay.
We have it recorded so we can watch it when we're done with this. But. Yeah.
And I was, I mean, I at one point, Bill Maher slams his hands on the desk and says, I must fucking stop you.
Wow.
And that was just the beginning of it. I mean, at one point, Angela Rye is like trying to say something and Moore just would not let her speak. And so she just like gave up and just like threw up her hands, and Moore grabbed his arm.
Wow.
And like pulled him back and was like, no, let her finish. And she was like, no, go ahead.
Wow.
And so Moore was like, no, seriously, say it. And so finally she started to talk, and I shit you not, Moore cut in on her again. And she just stopped and looked at him and goes, really?
Whoa. And that's a show where people definitely talk over each other regularly. So it must have been particularly, like, yeah.
At one point he put his hand on her and she goes, why are you touching
what?
Me?
No.
I mean, this was like really weird. This guy has no business being on television.
Wow.
Well, none of the surrogates do, right? I mean, true. Katrina Pearson and
bless her heart.
Yeah, bless her poor heart.
I don't know how she's going to have a career after this.
And Boris Epstein, and oh my God,
Kellyanne Conway. Find... At this point, I can't even look at her face when she talks. It just makes like I just get like.
But I have sympathy for her. She is trying to corral this group of losers and weirdos and sycophants and Giulianis and Gingriches and Katrina Pearsons. And just like, she's clearly the only actual adult in the room. And it's like,
strangely enough.
And yeah. She chose to work for Donald fucking Trump.
She chose to take that on. Yeah. I not real sympathy, but like, I guess I can appreciate the incredible difficulty of what she's trying to do, I guess.
Oh, God.
I mean, how funny is it when people like Katrina Pearson and Kellyanne Conway are the adults in the room?
Well, it's a level of madness.
And look, Conway knew what she was going to get when she got stepped under The View. She said, okay, yeah, this is going to be ugly and I'll just try to hold my own. And Whoopi Goldberg and then, just ripped her to shreds.
What's crazy to me, and I can't remember who was talking about it last night. Maybe it was Lawrence O'Donnell. Who was talking about the View episode and played a clip of Kellyanne Conway, I think maybe on Fox News, talking about how she took the bar exam in four different states and passed it every time. And she was making fun of Hillary Clinton because when Hillary Clinton first took the bar exam, she failed it.
Right.
And which honestly is like most of my friends who took the bar exam,
which is most lawyers,
most
yeah.
people. Yep.
And also, obviously, it depends on the state.
That's
like
what
California
I was just going to say. Yeah, yeah.
California is really, really hard. Mississippi, not so much.
Right.
But so Kellyanne Conway is like talking about this and making fun of Clinton and promoting how she took the bar exam four times in four different states. And then I think it was Megyn Kelly said something about how she passed the bar exam, no problem. Well, then Kellyanne Conway gets on The View and basically sells her boss down the river by admitting that he broke the trade embargo with Cuba.
Yeah, right? You know what? I saw that and I was like, is she sabotaging him? Is she, you know, like clearly.
I don't think she knew. I honestly think that she
has no
clue because, I mean, I'm not an attorney and I understand the difference between doing business in Cuba and spending money in Cuba, but that's because I got a lot of hippie friends who totally broke the embargo and, you know, went to Cuba.
Well, sure, they broke it and they stayed a few nights and bought some drugs or, you know, bought some daiquiris.
Right,
but
yeah.
Trump spent
Trump
spent tens of thousands of dollars laying the groundwork for the Trump Taj Mahal when Castro dies or whatever his plan was.
Which Kurt Eichenwald from Newsweek, who wrote the story, said, I think on Lawrence O'Donnell is where I saw it.
Yeah,
Kurt's
like last night.
Kurt's like, I don't know how you even spend tens of thousands of dollars in Cuba. In the 1990s,
you got to grease a lot of politicians
clearly.
And local people, and you know, I mean, and we know a lot of those good ardent Communist Party members were corrupt like anybody else, but
right.
You know, and we were talking about this in the first segment. I'm from South Florida, and in 2008, this still would have been a big story. A politician of any kind, let alone a presidential candidate, breaking the embargo. And spending money now. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I know it's a weird kind of issue and we're in sort of a complicated place. And I hope that, I mean, I really want to go to Cuba and see it before it you know, falls apart and everything.
Me too.
I thought about applying for a journalist visa because I would like to do stories about, honestly, about the women there and the culture and the similarities about raising children there with the similarities of raising children in the United States, but then also look at, you know, how it's different and harder. And, but I don't know, Dr. Biden actually is going next week. And I was thinking about, hey, Dr. Biden, can I hitch a ride on your plane?
Right. I would love to hear stories about that. Yeah.
But anyway, so tell us about your trip to Capitol Hill to see, the Black, Congressional Caucus and the millennial topic that came up and all that cool stuff.
So the Congressional Black Caucus has been kind of getting out there on a couple of different issues about Trump whenever he tries to talk about race. The morning after the debate on Tuesday morning, the CBC started talking about, they talked about some of the issues that he discussed and tried to promote a little bit about what Hillary Clinton was talking about, and then talked a little bit more about millennials. But what was really interesting to me, and I talked to them further about this, like after, because most of their talk was more just pro-Hillary stuff. And so I had to talk to them after the fact to get the more anti-Trump stuff.
Right.
And they talked about how insulting it was that the way that Trump talks about the African American community is condescending, and it is really focusing on the negative aspects of the community. It's insulting that the second he's asked to talk about race in the United States, he immediately says the words law and order, talks yes. about crime, talks about shooting
during the debate. Yeah, law and order, law and order, law and order.
And Congresswoman Barbara Lee from California was like, dude, we got education, we've got paid family leave and childcare, we've got, I mean, there are a shit ton of other issues that matter to the African American community. Education is a big part of it, making sure that
But Trump's message about the African American community is never to the African American community.
Exactly.
He knows he's lost it, so he wants to at the same time scare as many white people as he can, that he's going to keep all the inner city people from shooting all the white people, and to some of the other suburban people, that he's not really that racist because, oh, look, he isn't that sweet. He cares about
suburban white women who don't mm-hmm. know if they want to vote for him because he might be a little racist.
Which, yeah, a lot of the pollsters have talked about this as being a ploy to suburban white women.
It has to be.
And that's why he goes in front of entirely white audiences. He doesn't talk to the black community.
Yeah. No, and when he does, it's a disaster.
And I wanted to ask you, I think that's really interesting because Hillary's pivot during the debate about how he was being so negative and that, you know, we need to also honor the black community and talk about, you know, how vibrant it is and black businesses and black churches and like all of this kind of stuff. I was sitting in a room full of white people and I thought it was a lovely thing to say, but I wondered how it would play to people in the black community. So it's really interesting that they specifically brought that up, that he's so negative and he's so disparaging and all he wants to talk about
is crime.
Yeah, crime.
And and I mean, I think I had heard a couple of people talk about that, like friends who've talked about that before, but I'd never heard a member of Congress in such strong terms talk about how insulting it was to assume that the only issues that matter in the African American community would be law and order. And then of course he went off on stop and frisk.
Right.
And I mean, talk about the worst possible policy to mention to the African American community.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, how completely,
well, that's Giuliani in his ear for one thing.
Right. Yeah,
but also that has to be a sign. It's clearly not aimed at the African American community because who wants to hear about stop and frisk? White people.
Right. Right.
And it's not really this. And it was sort of unconstitutional, but, you know, it's not really. And it's
lies
not really profiling
and, says that
and it works really well. And you're like, what fucking evidence is there to suggest that it works really well? I mean, not that Trump needs to ever back anything he says up with evidence, but like that's just fundamentally untrue.
Yeah.
And again, so is everything he says, so I guess
Yeah.
I don't know. So what did they think about in terms of millennials? Like, how did that come up?
So, what was really interesting is that I went into this thinking that, you know, they pitched it as being a conversation, with the press about the debate last night. And then it really ended up being more about, they were talking more about millennials, in the context of the questions that they were getting from folks, about Trump's comments about African Americans. They talked a little bit about how the issues that, millennials of color face are being largely ignored by Trump as well. So
yes,
the issue of stop and frisk is a millennial of color issue.
Yes.
The issues of education and jobs and healthcare and childcare and access to services and all of these things are all, affordable housing. These are all, African or, millennial people of color issues. And they're all ignored by Trump, or he's just absolutely terrible on those issues.
Right.
So they talked a lot about how that message is one that they hope that they can, that Hillary can not only convey, but they, can convey as surrogates for her. And, the two that I was talking to were Democrats.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are, any, I don't remember if there are Republican members of the CDC. I'm sure there probably is.
I don't know that there are, to be honest.
I think there may have been at one point.
That's a really good point. Like, those are all things that also impact all millennials, but certainly,
exactly,
certainly, people of color of our generation are largely, more impacted by things, particularly when we talk about education, because of the way education is funded, as we've talked about ad nauseum, because I can't stop talking about it, largely in most places through property taxes and the way that school districts are defined, and the way that segregation still largely exists, make that education issue, I think, the most, one of the bigger issues for, the African American community.
Yeah. And Barbara Lee talked a lot about, millennial women specifically and women of color who are millennials, and how pay equity is such an important thing for them. Just because a lot of times whenever you talk about, women making, what is it, 72 cents on the dollar, mm-hmm, women of color make even less than that.
I think it's like 66 cents, right? Something along those lines. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and that's one thing that I always said about Bernie Sanders is, you know, he was always really strong on the economic issue, and economic inequality and all of that stuff, but he never really dove down in front of white people, and talked about systemic racism, which is a phrase that came out of her mouth at the debate,
mm-hmm,
which I was really happy to hear. I think that there's a reason that she has such a stronghold on the African American vote, because she speaks directly to their issues. She's listened, and she's tried to understand over the course of her career what those issues are and how she can best help. And so anybody that says that, you know, she's been bad for them or it's a bad vote for African Americans just doesn't understand, I think, her relationship to them, and also, her ability to understand what really is happening in their communities.
Yeah, and I think that you're seeing that reflected in the polling that Clinton versus Trump, African Americans are not voting for Trump, and they don't seem to be voting third party either.
No, I saw a poll that said 0%, like, of whatever this poll was, literally 0%.
Yeah, and some of these polls that are better for Trump are kind of goofy in that they're showing him getting 33 or 35%.
Oh, that's
of the
bullshit.
Black vote. Like this one that came out of Florida that showed it tied, showed him getting like 33% of blacks in Florida, and I really highly doubt that.
Nope.
So.
What's interesting to me too is you look at a lot of the polls. I know the polls that they've been doing, working on all week. There were a lot of the snap polls that happened right after the debate, and now these are the ones that they actually worked on a good sample size of people and
right,
did it over the course of the week. Those are coming out today, and the Fox News poll showed Hillary Clinton leading still. But they always say likely voters, and I understand why they poll likely voters. But, when you look at voter registration, there's voter registration among people of color, particularly Latinos in, Nevada, Colorado, Arizona.
We were just talking about that before you came on. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, that's exploding. And, a friend of mine who does voter registration work with TurboVote told me that, the day after the debate, TurboVote's Virginia page, Virginia was so overwhelmed with applications of people updating their voter registration or applying for voter registration that it got shut down. So they had to go to paper instead of doing it online. I don't think that was a TurboVote problem. I think that was the state of Virginia had that problem. And we know that Virginia is probably going to go for Clinton anyway, but I hope that it was not just Virginia that, you know, was
I'm sure it wasn't. And that's what we talked about. I think that the voter screens and the pollsters are still missing a lot of Hispanic vote, especially Spanish speaking only households. A lot of pollsters don't employ that at all. And we saw them undercounted in a lot of polls in Nevada and especially Colorado in 2012. And I think they're doing it now. As well, which is why you see a lot of polls with Trump doing way better than people thought in Nevada, because I think they're undercounting a lot of Hispanic voters. But
there's also a push in Colorado by the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Organization that they're doing their own set of canvassing, as are a lot of campaigns with their literature, in English on one side, Spanish on the back, in particularly low-income communities, that is basically... you may think that you can't vote, but you can. And so they sort of list, you can vote if the following things, and it has to do with criminal justice because that's their mission, but they talk about, you know, if you have a felony or if you're currently in the system or if you're in jail but you haven't been convicted yet. There's like a lot of different things in Colorado that determine your eligibility to vote, and there's a lot of misinformation being spread around to these communities. Specifically to try to disenfranchise them. And so there's an entire canvassing effort in our state to try to dispel some of those myths and talk to people and let people that can vote know that they can and try to register them. So there's a lot going on in terms of communities that we may not be polling and may not be talking to.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that as we should not hinge our entire, you know, hopes and dreams and expectations on that. But I hope that, you know, they do the work that is necessary. Everybody, you know, knocks on doors and makes phone calls and does the work that's necessary. And then there's an overage just because, you know, they're not counting those people.
Exactly. And all of us privileged white folks got to get out and fucking actually vote.
And take people with us.
Yeah. And hold people's feet to the fire that you know. That's
well, obviously we're doing that. And on the subject of cranky millennials, you know, we butt heads with our peers a lot on a lot of different stuff, like the holdout Bernie or bust people, and some of them have morphed into Gary Johnson people.
Mm-hmm. How the fuck did that happen?
That's just what I want to ask you about. If you're encountering this in maybe your circle of people you know, or I mean, look, if you're a libertarian leaning millennial, then I get it. But if you,
like our friend Raul, he's going to vote for Gary Johnson, I presume.
He's kind of over Johnson. I think he's just going to sit this one out.
Okay,
but
it's fine with me.
But overall, our Bernie friends who said, "Oh, we didn't get Bernie, and Hillary is too right wing," so now Gary Johnson.
Most of them are voting for Jill Stein, to be fair, or Hillary.
But a bunch of them are saying they're going to vote for Johnson.
Johnson people, yeah.
And I don't get it. Is it the pot thing? I mean, that's no excuse for people here in Colorado.
Right.
True. You know what kills me, and Bill Maher talked about this tonight too, and Stephen Colbert was making fun of Gary Johnson last night. But when you look at the issues that Bernie cared about and that Bernie's supporters cared about, issues like equal pay, issues like the minimum wage, all of these things about about making a more fair economy. Gary Johnson does not give a shit about those issues. No, he is not good on those issues.
He's completely anti those
issues. He's on the opposite of those issues.
Exactly.
He wants to deregulate Wall Street. He wants to not impose things like minimum wage standards for businesses.
He doesn't believe in climate change.
Doesn't believe in climate. Like, he's fundamentally against everything that's on Bernie's platform.
So I guess my question is this, Sarah. Because our friend Armando from Daily Coast, he gets the cranky old man position of, well, these millennials don't really care about issues. And I say, no, they care. They're just really grossly misinformed.
Or yeah.
They're stuck in their thought bubble to where, oh, Hillary is just as bad as Trump, so whatever. I mean, what is accounting? I mean, I get it if they're going to go for Stein. I think she's an awful candidate and all the other things, but at least she's got progressive-ish ideas on a lot of issues.
I mean,
what is the Johnson appeal?
I think you're spot on. I think the Johnson appeal is people just don't actually know where he is on the issues. I think that they assume
not Hillary Clinton.
It's just an old stoner. I think it's not Hillary. Yeah.
I think it's an old stoner, not Hillary, and I think that they're looking at him as this, you know, savior who's pretty chill and relaxed and silly. And he's goofy. Funny. Yeah. And so I think that there is, you know, a humanizing aspect to somebody who completely humiliates themselves on national television, not once, but twice in the last like month.
Yeah, I guess.
So maybe there's something to that. I mean, you mentioned Jill Stein. I was talking to boyfriend about this today, and we were just like, shaking our heads because there are all of these people who see Jill Stein as this great leader on climate change and on climate issues. And I'm like, but she's an anti-vaxxer.
Right.
So how can you, like, she has no credibility on science.
No,
if she believes in climate change is real, then you have to understand that there is science that backs up vaccinations.
You either believe in science or you don't. And I agree. You cannot hold two positions. You cannot say, obviously, the scientific community has overwhelmingly supported the idea of climate change, and then say the scientific and medical community have overwhelmingly said that there is no vaccine issue, but I don't care.
She's not a full-on anti-vaxxer, but she does some winks and nods.
Well, yeah, but she said, like, movement. I think it's something we should look into, and you're like, no, science already did look into it,
yeah.
And it is fine, and
yeah.
You are stoking this in any way.
No,
is
completely grossly irresponsible.
Yes.
And a medical doctor of
yes.
all things.
Exactly. I mean, that's the humiliating part, is you're just like, dude. And I don't know. I mean, I saw a poll, I think it was the end of last week, they had one up, or maybe it was this week. Everything's really running together at this point. about millennials, it was the Bloomberg Politics poll.
The Bloomberg showed millennials are really still hostile to Hillary Clinton.
They're still hostile to Hillary Clinton. 11% are going to Gary Johnson. Jill Stein isn't even on the chart.
Right.
And I honestly think that that is because millennials are informed about the anti-vaxxer thing.
Yeah.
I think that...
But what are they not informed? Well, look, if 11% of millennials, because 11% have libertarian leanings on Johnson, that's fine. But if you're telling me those 11% were former Bernie supporters, then I've got a real issue there.
I do think that they're libertarian-leaning people.
Because
that is consistent with, like, the Rand Paul and the Ron Paul people and what we saw in 2000.
The fedora-wearing obnoxious...
Well, hold on. Here's what I think about millennials being libertarians, is that millennials, by and large, are not conservative, particularly on social issues.
Sure.
They don't give a shit about gay marriage. They don't want to restrict your abortion rights. They definitely think pot should be legal. So
yeah.
They're having a really hard time identifying as Republicans.
Right.
But a lot of them are like Josh, my brother, and he's like, he is fiscally conservative. He is. He believes in the bootstraps, and he believes that he shouldn't have to pay more because he makes more, and he has these, and, you know, he's not super informed, and we fight a lot about it, but, like, he has these leanings that are fiscally conservative, but he's definitely socially liberal.
Of course.
So I think that we probably make up a larger percentage, I would think, of the Libertarian Party than certainly we do of, you know, hardcore Republican or Tea Partiers or anything else. I think that that's one point where our generation is drifting from the people older than we are.
Yeah, but it's still just 11%.
Which is good. I hope the rest of them are Democrats. But I just think that there is definitely going to be a slice of us that goes libertarian. And maybe a larger slice than other generations.
That's fine. I'm talking specifically about, and we know some of these people maybe, that are saying, I was a Bernie supporter and now I'm voting for Gary Johnson. Because that just makes no sense.
I don't know that there are that many of them that are out there like that. I mean, I definitely believe they're out there, but I don't think that there are that many of them. I mean, they had a CNN thing today where they pulled in a bunch of millennials who voted for Barack Obama in 2012 and then asked them who they were voting for. One was going Stein, one was Hillary, and one was undecided.
Okay.
I heard an NPR interview, too, about that we talked about last week, about people who are just now, this is the first election they can vote in. And really, the overwhelming majority of them that they talk to are going to vote for Hillary. I think one was going to vote for Trump, and the rest of them were either undecided Hillary or like maybe one of those other people. So I don't know. Everybody shits all over us, but I think our generation,
the kids are all right,
we'll
as Greg says.
We'll come around.
Well, as this stuff funnels down and, you know, more debates and it really gets focused on the two candidates, a lot of that third party support is going to melt away.
Yeah.
And Johnson and Stein aren't on the ballot in a bunch of states. That's what a lot of people
realize. It's true. I already voted. I got my ballot in the mail this week, and I filled it out, and Jill Stein wasn't even on it.
That's
really?
That's D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Oklahoma.
Oh, that's right.
That's where that accent comes from. In Colorado, our ballots drop on October 16th. October 17th. So we should get them mid October.
Yeah. Just a couple weeks
but
now.
We're completely mail in. There is no opportunity or option to go to a polling place. So that's going to be a really interesting thing to watch. And
this is the first election for that?
Yeah, we've been mail in for a really long time, but there's always been the option of being able to go in.
I don't think there was in 2014.
I don't think there was for the midterm either, but as far as a presidential
election. But 2012
election,
there was, because I wasn't here in 2012.
Yeah, there's you could always still been go an option in. To go in.
Yeah, this year it's all mail-in.
There's no option. You get your ballot or you don't.
And some of the older folks might not know that.
A lot of people don't know that. It's terrifying to me. When I was knocking doors, it became a thing that I started telling literally every person. Even if I couldn't get information out about my candidate, I would tell them, by the way, this year is completely mail-in, and your ballot's going to come in the mail. Around October 17th or 18th.
I mean, I've heard them mention it on the local news a bunch of times.
And you have to have a stamp. Now, there's another thing we learned about this that I think is really interesting. So you have to pay to mail it.
Yeah.
Right? You have to have a stamp. However, there's this philanthropic fund that exists that no one knows about, that no one talks about, that if you send your ballot in the mail with no stamp on it, the post office will deliver it.
Yeah.
And then this philanthropic fund pays the post office for whatever postage for anybody who doesn't put a stamp on it so that their ballot gets counted.
I thought the midterms ones where the postage was covered.
No. They've never covered postage.
Maybe I just dropped it off, too, because there's
always,
a lot of places.
That's the other thing. I always drop mine off in the drop. Me either. So I always go to the thing and drop it off. But, no, you have to put a stamp on it if you put it in the mail. Except, actually, you don't. So, please do. But actually, don't worry about it. If you don't have a stamp, and, like, especially millennials, let's be honest, we don't mail a lot of things.
Never.
Do everything
never.
So, like, just never. Put it in the mail and it'll be fine.
It's a big hassle whenever I need to find a friggin' stamp.
I just have stamps because I'm like an old woman, actually. I'm actually like 80.
And I'll borrow one of yours then.
Yeah. I
keep buying a book of stamps and then I lose the book of stamps. So I use like one of them. And then I know that someday, like when I move, I'm going to find 30 of them. Be like, damn it.
See, I keep my stamps in my checkbook because I'm actually an old lady. And I have both of those things.
Always
keep
my checkbook.
And Kleenex in my purse and, you know. I'm actually 80, but yeah.
The
80-year-old
millennial.
Yes, yes.
Bless your heart.
I know. Bless my heart.
So this next debate, they're saying that Trump needs to really turn it around, but it's a town hall. I mean, how is he going to resist when he gets a question, a tough question, from just insulting the person who asked
him
the question?
Asks. Yeah,
I know, right? I mean, this is going to be bad. I really think that this is going to be bad. And honestly, I wrote another story tonight that was covering an interview that the New York Times did with Trump, where he admitted that that he doesn't need to do any more preparation than he's already done.
Well, he hasn't done any, so that's not a hell of a lot more than he's already done.
Drinking Cokes and having hot dogs with his buddies and talking about zingers.
Or snorting Coke, right? If you listen to Howard Dean.
Or snorting Coke, yeah. No, I legit, for sure, was watching that debate, and I was like, oh, my God, he's high.
Well, okay.
Can I say, just really quick,
okay,
maybe I'm wrong, but he was definitely acting like people I know that have been on that particular drug, and the fact that it was a no commercial break, no bathroom break debate, and he crashed about 30 minutes in means he was coming down. He was great for the first 20 minutes. He was sniffling a lot, but he was doing fine. And then he had no opportunity to go rail a line in the bathroom. I don't know if he just didn't think about it or if he was
Hold on. Do you actually think that he was jacked up on coke?
Yes.
Wow. Well, you and Howard Dean.
I do. And I don't think Howard Dean should get shit for that.
Howard Dean got a lot of shit for that. He's still getting shit for that.
And you watch Donald Trump? Like, you're like, oh, yeah. No,
he's a 70-year-old dude. I mean, if he's still pounding coke.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just thought, like,
he needed it for the debate.
For the debate,
it's been 20 years, but 30 years.
I don't know what his drug experience looks like, but I'm not saying for sure. I have no evidence other than just I've been around a lot of people on coke, and he was like, and then I was like, I literally was like eating dinner going, oh my God, he has no break. He's going to come down. Like, he's going to crash. And he did.
And then he did.
Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. What an idiot.
All right. Well, but even if Howard Dean, I almost said Howard Stern, even if Howard Dean really thought that, he shouldn't have said it. Right?
Oh, I think he should have said it. Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the good thing about Howard Dean is Howard Dean doesn't hold any office, and Howard Dean doesn't give a fuck.
He gives no fucks. He gives no fucks whatsoever.
Nope.
And of all the people who can say stuff like that, he's one of them.
Yeah, but some of these reporters went apeshit over that comment.
Oh, they totally did. And I think that's completely justifiable for them to go apeshit over it.
But I still love that he said it.
But I love that he said it, and I love that he's like, I'm not apologizing. Fuck that. I think he's on coke.
I do. Like, I do,
well,
too.
Well, finally he did today apologize.
He did. Stephen Colbert made the same thing. He made the same joke.
Well,
Colbert is Colbert. I mean.
Well, and then Nick Confessori is going absolutely apeshit today because maybe there was something wrong with Trump's mic in the auditorium.
How does that mean that you don't know how to make coherent sentences? The mic did not make your brain stop
working.
That's
the thing. So Trump's excuse that he gave is that because he was getting signaled by Melania from the audience that there was something wrong and she couldn't hear him, mm-hmm. he was freaking out during the debate, and so he wasn't as good as he would have been.
Okay.
Because he was too freaked out about that.
He would have been like, All right. Stop everything. My mic's not working. My wife can't hear me. Can you guys hear? He would have done something. He's a man of immense ego and privilege. He's not just going to silently freak out.
If he's out of his mind on a coke binge, he might.
And well, that's the argument that everybody's saying is there. He claims, you know, I thought about stopping everything, but I didn't know how that would look. I call bullshit on that.
No, you don't give a shit how things look.
Trump doesn't care how things look. And for him to now all of a sudden be like, oh, I don't want it to look bad. It's like, dude, you're motherfucker, you're tweeting at 3 o'clock in the morning. You don't care how things look.
It's never occurred to him before how anything looks. I can't imagine it would now.
Yeah, well, for some reason, Nick Confessori is just losing his mind over the Trump microphone
the
thing.
Who is?
The sniffles.
He's
the microphone.
He's a writer for New York Times.
Oh.
He's getting all Bernstein and Woodward on microphone gate.
Oh, God.
For some reason.
Stop it.
So what happens next? We covered the David Fahrenthold stuff with the charity that's not licensed to be a charity and all the other shit and the Cuba stuff and the
Miss Universe.
It's like there's too many shoes dropping that it's impossible to focus on one.
I feel like
the media is just primed for another Hillary thing, like another WikiLeaks dump. But what are they going to say? I mean, what is more going to reveal? Somebody really, really didn't like Bernie Sanders, or somebody in the DNC really? I mean, what?
I think the media has run out of comparative stories for the two. Like,
but
there's nothing left for her. We know all the things. We always have. Mm-hmm. And so they're running out of this, like, but also don't forget Hillary did. Now, yeah, she didn't do any of those crazy things this week. So I guess we'll just say she's kind of great. Like, there's nothing else left to say about her unless she does something like makes a gaffe or.
Well, she will.
You know,
I mean, they'll make one up.
She's on the campaign trail. It happens every year, every time. But I do. I think they're just out of, like, he's too crazy and there's not a lot left to say about her that we don't already know.
But they want to for the both sides, you know.
Right.
Agenda.
Unbiased bullshit, yeah.
Well, I kind of predicted this too. Whenever you go so hard against Hillary Clinton for 30 years and you start so early attacking her for crazy ass shit, like they've been doing this Benghazi thing for a couple of years now, and then they've been doing the emails thing for a year now, and so they have oversaturated themselves and they didn't save anything for an October surprise. They just kept throwing every single thing that they had, and now there's just such an oversaturation that people, I mean, they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Well, they'll try to manufacture an October surprise. WikiLeaks will make something up, or the Russians will make something up and hope it sticks. But
I think it's an excellent point, though. Like, they did come at her really early and really hard and really strong. And
well, because they viscerally hate her.
They
can't
do.
Help themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they are out of steam. Everyone's like, yeah, yeah, emails again. I don't care. I don't care.
No,
because
people do care, though.
Trump supporters.
No, even your
average.
Do you
think Marge and Davenport cares?
Yes. You ask her, well, I don't like that email thing. Well, what about it? Something, something email, dishonest. You know, we didn't get to Bob and Carol. We were going to talk about Bob and Carol. Well,
we got
about 5 minutes. Should we tell Sarah the story?
You want to hear about Bob and Carol?
Yeah.
All right.
Or so, Bob and Linda.
Bob and Linda, actually. We've renamed her Linda. So Travis and I went to Florida for vacation, and we were staying at this beachside hotel.
Mm-hmm. In the Tampa area.
Yeah. And we went downstairs. There was like a tiki bar and then like another bar at the resort. And so we were like, all right, we'll go look at the ocean and we'll have a drink. It'll be great. The tiki bar contained an entirely unacceptable cover band that I will not get into at great length. But let me just say, like, please never again play anywhere. And Travis is a musician, and he was losing his goddamn mind. And then
a little bit, yeah.
They started playing like Temple Pilots, and I was like, I'm done. Like, I cannot sit here anymore with this man and these. I can't. No. Like, Scott Weiland also died this year, so fuck you guys. So we left, and we went to this other bar, and they were like closed or whatever. So we went into this other place, like the inside version of
the tiki bar.
And as we're walking in, there's this couple. It's pretty empty. Sitting at the bar, and I walk past them, and I hear Bob say to her, I just want you to be open with me, Carol, this time.
Well, and describe them. They're about mid-40s, early 50s, maybe.
Mid-40s. Yeah. Very white.
Probably from Iowa.
Definitely from, like, the Midwest. Pasty and just hardy folk, you know?
Bob's wearing, like, acid wash kind of jeans,
yeah,
and a tucked in Oxford shirt,
yeah,
and sneakers.
Carol was wearing kind of like a flowy but ill-fitting
70s
floral sundress,
yeah,
and she's got like a short haircut because they have kids. And anyway, so I heard him say that to her, and I sort of was like, oh, that's interesting. And we sat at this table, like, right next to them.
Within earshot. And they're drunk and they're loud.
Especially,
they
are. Especially Carol.
Yes. Or especially, Linda. We call her Linda now. But yeah, so I can hear her because she's aimed at me. And Bob is aimed sort of at the bar and away from me. And so I'm overhearing this conversation that goes on for, we were there for like at least an hour.
Yeah.
In which Carol divulges that, well, so Bob's basically accusing her of cheating and at the same time sort of trying to negotiate because he knows that she's been fucking around.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to negotiate, like, how do I save my marriage? Also, she's kind of trying to, like, get him to want to fuck around, and they're trying to negotiate, like, an open relationship.
Yeah, yeah. Very awkwardly.
Oh, my God.
And
it was hard.
Midwestern white people who don't know how to do this sort of thing.
No, they have no idea what they're talking about or how to do this at all.
It's a train wreck, and we can't keep our eyes or ears off it.
Yeah, no, and I just keep, like, telling Travis all the things I'm hearing. Like, at a certain point, it is revealed that Carol has told her friends about some issue Bob is having in the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And
scandalous.
He heard it from that friend's husband. And he, the only point in the entire conversation where she feels like even at all any regret, really, she starts to cry and says, no, I would never say that. And I wouldn't share that. And they, no. And I'm like, well, then how does Jeff know then, Carol? How would Jeff know that about Bob? If you didn't tell Linda, his wife, like, how would he know? Right. So, but I feel sort of bad for her, and it's been a little bit sexless, and I feel sort of bad for him, and, you know, we're just listening and sort of whatever.
Who is it we figured she was banging? The tennis instructor?
Oh, so she's definitely banging her tennis partner.
Tennis partner.
Not instructor, her tennis partner, because she at one point was like, slammed her hands down on the bar and was like, it's just a friendship, Bob.
And what was his name again? Because he was a Hispanic guy, too.
Yeah, he was a Hispanic guy, yeah. Enrique, I think.
Enrique something
The tennis partner. But yeah. It's just a friendship, Bob. Anyway, so we're going through this entire drama with this couple and really, like, glued to it. And then things sort of start to die down.
Yeah.
And they start talking about the kids and, you know, this vacation they're having. And it's clear that, like, they're going to maybe go bang. And they're very drunk. And somehow politics comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear, what was it? Bob said,
how can you vote for him?
He's such a sexist pig. And she said, well, I'm not voting for Hillary. She's a liar. Like, I can't imagine.
She's a crook.
She's a crook. And Bob is, like, trying to reason with her and try to say, like, but he's a sexist. Like, he's awful. He says terrible things about women. And Carol is like, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to me at all. I don't care. I hate her. She's awful. And fucking Carol is a Trump supporter.
Our jaws just dropped.
Wow. We were like,
we were
holy
starting to have
shit.
A little sympathy for
yeah.
her. We were starting to maybe think maybe she's not the bad guy.
Maybe their marriage is just, you know, like, I get it. And then it was like, oh, Bob, you got to leave her.
Bob,
like, immediately.
Yeah. Bob needs to leave.
Dump the motherfucker already. Like, she already did all this shit, and now she's a Trump supporter, and you beautiful man, are making an argument about women's equality. You dump the motherfucker already. Don't. There's a million Carols.
She's at least banging her tennis partner, probably the kid's karate instructor, because that's a given.
I mean, two.
Oh, and the wife. Oh, my God. There was another woman who the husband of the couple was cheating on the wife. And so Carol was trying to negotiate whether or not the wife would have sex with her husband so that they could all be even. So, like, Carol cheated, husband
because
of this other couple cheated,
works.
And then just swap, and then it'll be even, because that's how it works.
Desperate Housewives, the reality show, played out in the Tiki Bar in Tampa in front of our eyes. It was a wonderful thing, Sarah. We wish she could
crazy.
Have been there to experience it with us.
But
and
she's
a Trump supporter. That's the twist.
And maybe that is why Bob can't get it up.
Because how do you fuck a Trump supporter?
I could never.
In a million
ever.
Years.
I mean, that honestly, I was in a relationship with somebody for a couple of years and it broke up because we didn't agree politically. And I was like, I just can't.
No.
I don't know.
I don't understand it. I don't get the whole James Carville, Mary Matlin thing. Like, it's just, no. Like,
a boyfriend and I actually talked about that and he was like, I think it would be easier if you were a conservative to be okay with a liberal, because I don't think conservatives really think about it that way. Like, they don't let it interfere with their personal life. They don't really think about it like that. Whereas liberals are really emotional and invested, and they have opinions that are based on, you know, how they feel about things. Like,
maybe,
we
yeah.
feel very strongly about saving animals. We feel very strongly about helping the poor. We feel
yeah.
very strongly about making sure that African-American men are not getting shot by the police.
Right. And some of it's personal. Like, I care very much about my reproductive rights.
Well, in the case
and my
of,
right to get paid and my
yeah.
friend's rights to not have to go back to work 2 weeks after she has a goddamn baby. And,
right.
you know, things like that. So you're probably right.
Well, in the case of Carville and Matlin, it also helps when you're very rich.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah.
On that note, we are out of time. But thank you so much, Sarah, for taking time
yeah,
out of your very
you so
busy night
to
gab with us again.
This is awesome. Yeah. I missed you guys.
We missed you too.
And you are welcome anytime. So check out all of Sarah's awesome stories on rawstory.com. We retweet them all the time. And I've noticed all our Daily Coast friends are retweeting Sarah quite a bit, too.
Yes.
So that's
yeah.
cool. And yeah, thanks again. We will be back next week, of course. So stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. And check us out on Twitter at Irreverent Duo, hate mail, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. And again, at Sarah Burris on Twitter as well. So adios and good night.
I'm feeling kind of numb, feeling kind of dumb, thinking of you only. I'm feeling kind of low, feeling kind of slow, thinking that you own me. Melt my metal bones in the fire inside of you. Mend my broken heart back, broke because of you. Melt my metal bones in the fire inside of you. Mend my broken heart back, broke because of you. I'm built to break for you only. I only love to love you. I'm built to break.